Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three, hit it!
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yes!
Paul touch it up!
The doctor!
Goes to Hart. On Thompson steps right, shoots for the win, a three, he got it!
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. And today, we are joined by our special correspondent, Mr. Ben DuBose. Ben, how's your hand feeling?
Pretty tired. I feel like I've had a few air punches, frustration.
I kind of imagined as soon as the referees decided that they weren't going to count that bucket from James that you might have hit the table or punched a wall out or something. So I'm glad that I don't see any cuts on your hand. That's a good thing.
No, the funny thing, at the time, I didn't mind it as much. I had more of a roll my eyes reaction than I did, you know, actual anger, because I thought the Rockets at the time, up 13 points, would be able to hold on, win the game. And I knew we'd be doing a podcast Wednesday. And I thought we'd be talking about how, you know, unfortunately they had to expend a little bit more energy than we would have liked. But ultimately, you know, they got the win. It didn't cost them. As it turned out, of course, we learned later on the Lonnie Walker explosion contributing to it. That call ended up being very impactful. So did their collapse. And so, in a weird way, I was much more upset about the call after the fact than I was the moment that it happened.
Is it weird that right when it happened, I thought to myself and I said, this is going to matter? Like, even though you were up 13, I looked at it and I was like, you know what? This is one of those things where the basketball gods are going to look at this game and they're going to say, you know what? We're going to make this missed dunk count.
Yeah, I wondered that. I just thought they had been so dominant since, you know, they had a sluggish first quarter, and in the second and third quarter, they bumped the lead up to 22. They had played so well. Harden, at the time, was not really shooting all that poorly. I know he finished 11 of 38, but a lot of that had to do with, you know, late in the fourth quarter, the overtimes, when I think we'll both agree that he sort of ran out of gas, in part because the usage rate was so high. Russell Westbrook, 7 of 30, did very little to help. And at the time, I knew, you know, there's that thing gnawing at the back of my mind that, you know, yeah, a call like that, somehow it will matter. But it's just logistically, I couldn't see how, you know, at that point, the 7-14 Spurs against a Rockets team that's, you know, 13-6 and had largely outplayed them over the previous two plus quarters were going to overcome that type of deficit. And yet, sure enough, they did.
Credit to the Spurs, credit to Lonnie Walker and to Bryn Forbes. They absolutely torched the Rockets in the back half of the fourth quarter and then throughout overtime. Just, you know, some of the defensive collapses, that's the part that really kills me, is Bryn Forbes just seemed to shake Westbrook every possession down the line.
The one possession that bothered me more than any other, yep, when they were up by three late in, I believe it was the first overtime.
I think so. I think you're right.
Yeah, when they had the three-point lead, or it might have been the second overtime, because I know they were coming from behind in the first. Of course, we're all a little bit bothered about Harden missing that floater at the end of the first overtime. But, you know, at that point, I think we'll all agree he was a little bit tired and running on fumes. Part of the reason Harden was even out there early in the fourth quarter, which is a bit atypical, I think D'Antoni was trying to put the game away. And unfortunately, it backfired. He ended up having to play Harden nearly 50 minutes. But yeah, the Rockets were up three. And then when they gave up that three to Forbes, how did you not see that coming? Other than DeRozan, the Spurs don't really have a player that's truly going to try and take you off the dribble. These guys like Mills, like Forbes, that are coming, you know, rolling around these screens, they are looking to fire that three. That is literally all they're looking to do. So if you're Russell Westbrook, I don't know why your hands are down. They're not going to beat you by, you know, faking a three and then taking you to the rim. DeRozan's the only guy that's any sort of threat at doing that. So play the three-point line aggressively, and with a three-point lead, Westbrook did, and that's what was so frustrating on top of, you know, a 7-30 game shooting-wise. The lapses that Westbrook had defensively, those were killers.
You know, I think that maybe we're on the same page here, but I want to get your take. You know, I think that defensively, James Harden is a fundamentally sound defensive player. I think at times his defensive awareness could be better, and there may be distinctly times where he does maybe take a player or two off on the defensive side of the ball, which We've seen it for years. Mm-hmm. That's okay. It happens occasionally. We've seen the best players in the game do it from time to time. But with Russell Westbrook, now that, you know, 20 games in, just watching him play, I don't see a lot of the defensive fundamentals there. Like, he gets turned around on possessions. He gets mixed up with the now I know that the Rockets defensive scheme is different than a lot of teams, that it's heavily involved with the switching on that side of the basketball, mm-hmm. and that can lead to some miscommunication, but there are times where he just doesn't look like he knows what he's doing on defense.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem is that there's a gap with the instincts. With Harden, you know, he's flawed. There are times that he can check out for a possession or two. We've seen that the usage rate plays into that, but generally he's such a smart player, and that transfers not just offensively, which is where it's talked about more, but defensively as well. With Westbrook, that's where I see the biggest gap, is that between the two of them, you know, Westbrook often plays hard. You see many times he gets engaged these one-on-one matchups where he takes it really seriously and he wants to use his athleticism and strength to sort of lock someone up. But it's just the little awareness things he just doesn't have. And I don't know, at 30 years old, if you can really coach it at this point, just the overall sense of instinct that Harden does, to just sort of know that, you know, when Forbes comes around that screen in a game that's, you know, maybe 90 seconds left and it's decided by 3 points, that he's going to be looking for that, especially because Forbes isn't really someone who can create his own offense off the dribble. That's just the type of play that, yeah, it's just a little demoralizing because, you know, Rush should know better, but for some reason the instincts just aren't there. And by contrast to Harden, who's not always a perfect defensive player, but in the key moments he seems to be very good. I think it's because he does a much better job of anticipating, and, you know, that's the mental side of the game, not just the physical.
Now, it's not all doom and gloom, because there may be a shred of hope that the NBA actually gets involved and grants the Rockets a win. And there's kind of two ways that they can do this. They can either come back in themselves, or the Rockets can protest this. And do you have more on that, Ben?
Yeah, I would be very surprised if they awarded the win, which apparently is one of the two scenarios. You know, the Rockets, obviously, there's the controversy over the missed James Harden dunk. I know you covered that a lot on Wednesday's show. The Rockets, of course, believe it should count, because it should have. It was a dunk that went through the net. And either they can count it and just add it to the fourth quarter total, in which case the Rockets would have won by two. But of course, it gets into, you know, the Spurs don't play the final minutes the same if there's two additional points on the scoreboard, so I understand that. Or the more reasonable avenue would be for the game to be replayed at that point, which is something that has been done a few times over NBA history when rules have not been properly applied. And, you know, I want to touch on this briefly because I want to make clear, the Rockets lost this game for a lot of reasons. We were just talking about, you know, Westbrook's defense. You can look at really overall the Rockets, they turned it off. It felt like midway through the fourth quarter, the momentum flipped, maybe in part because of that call. They could never really figure it out. I think in the second overtime, the defense got a little bit better, but by then, you know, Harden, the main guys on offense, were running on fumes. Westbrook, even when he wasn't on fumes, he never played well. There's a lot of reasons that the Rockets lost that basketball game. It's a tough break because 14-6, that feels a lot better at the quarter point than 13-7. So when we're talking about that call, we're not saying that it necessarily decided the game. Now, it was impactful because that would have been 2 points and the game is tied at the end of the quarter. So was it a big deal? Yes, but you can point to anything. 99% of the time, people on Twitter, when you get in these debates or you see these about, well, you know, did it cost so-and-so team the game? It's generally being used as an excuse because someone doesn't want to talk about that angle. You can really play that just about anything. You know, we can agree, for example, that Harden shooting 11 of 38, that was not very good, right?
No, bad night.
But you can also argue that, hey, if Russell Westbrook just shoots 8 of 30 instead of 7 of 30, still bad, but just one shot better, then the Rockets win the game. And so you can use the same logic to say, don't blame Harden. The point is, when you have a game that's decided by 2 points, literally anything can theoretically be what decided it. So it's really pointless to go down the rabbit hole of, well, did it cost you the game or not? Because in reality, there's tons of different things that cost you the game. It just depends on how exactly you want to look at it.
I do want to interject, though,
okay,
that I think that there was a mental aspect of this call being so absurd that not only was Harden hung up on it, D'Antoni, the assistant coaches, everybody was, I mean, they were rabid. They were, you know, berating the officials for the next 2 to 3 minutes of game time, not just
actual two to 3 minutes. For the next 2 to 3 minutes throughout the game, you saw D'Antoni firing up the refs. I mean, I think that they lost a little bit of distraction. Focus, and it was a distraction for sure.
Yeah, I can buy that. And so you could certainly point to it, but you know, you shouldn't absolve the team. And you also got to give the Spurs some credit. You know, what Lonnie Walker did, some of those shots were fairly well guarded. It was like a smaller skill version of, you know, T-Mac against the Spurs in Houston in 2004 with 13. You know, it wasn't that crazy, but Lonnie Walker had 8 in the last 90 seconds. So the Spurs did some great things in their comeback. You know, fortunately, or unfortunately, I should say, I kind of blame myself. I tweeted in the first half something about how, you know, you could see the talent in Lonnie Walker. He's just so raw. And I said maybe the Spurs need to just sink or swim, put him out there, and treat this as a developmental season.
So hashtag blame Ben.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's what they did. And when you know it, the guy who comes in averaging 2.5 points a game scores 28, including, you know, going almost T-Mac mode in the final 90 seconds to take the win. So, you know, credit to the Spurs. You can also blame the Rockets defense. You can blame, you know, Harden Westbrook shooting combined 18 of 68. All of that is true, but really, I just throw that out there as a caveat because I know there's some people listening. When you talk about the officials, they're saying, well, did it really cost you the game? Reality is a lot of things cost the Rockets the game. We don't need to get bogged down in that discussion. However, the reason why, and we're recording this Wednesday afternoon, it's possible when you listen to this that the NBA might have ruled. We'll wait and see. But I definitely think there's at least a chance for the Rockets to have the protest upheld. I don't think they'd be given the win. I think more reasonably they would replay the game. But this is worthwhile, in my opinion. This is not just another missed call. What bothers me most on Twitter are seeing the responses, and many times they're from San Antonio or people that, you know, just have access to grind with the Rockets. Well, what about when Westbrook went backcourt on that, you know, drive to Tyson Chandler at the end of the third quarter? Mm-hmm. Say, okay, there's a bad call that went the other way. Well, yeah, you can use that to excuse anything, because over any NBA game, there's going to be bad calls favoring one team and there's going to be bad calls favoring the other team. Of course, you can find calls that went the Rockets' way in this game. The reason that this protest is worthwhile for the Rockets is that it's not just about the judgment call. I said right after the game on Twitter Tuesday night, when some people were upset and wondering, oh, could the Rockets protest this? I said, no, that's never going to work because it needs to be something procedural. It's not going to be a judgment call because the league would view that as going down Pandora's box. You grant that, everybody who's wronged then thinks that they have the template to get the result overturned. And before you know it, you're down a rabbit hole. That at the time was why I didn't believe that the protest, even if they would have done it, would have had any chance. At this point, it is a little bit different because the postgame statements from Mike D'Antoni and from James Capers, the crew chief, were pretty troubling, and they do hint at a misapplication of the rules. That's different. That's why you can't point to, say, the Russell Westbrook backcourt violation that wasn't called and say, well, here's one that went, you know, the Rockets' way. Well, it's not the same thing unless you're alleging that the rules were misapplied there, that it was something beyond just a misjudgment call. In this case, what makes it so distinctive, Jackson, is that the Rockets had the right, according to the postgame interview from Capers, to challenge that. And you could see Mike D'Antoni and the players doing the challenge symbol. They wanted it, and yet they were not allowed to do so. The logic from Capers was that the Rockets formally request it within the 30-second window. The problem with that, according to D'Antoni, was that on multiple occasions, he was given different explanations as to what the call actually was. Was it basket interference? Was it out of bounds? And how can you possibly challenge when you don't know what you're challenging, when you don't know what the call is? It's common sense that the 30-second clock is not going to start until you know what the call is. And then what makes it really troubling, the crew chief interview with James Capers, when asked, you know, did you communicate to D'Antoni, you know, the time component that you're running out? He said he couldn't remember. So it's really troubling when you have these two guys. Mike D'Antoni is painting a picture, that, you know, he was not given a clear picture of what he could challenge. And then the other guy, it's not even that he's refuting what D'Antoni is saying. He doesn't remember. Then that is really
troubling.
It's
just mismanaged on multiple levels.
Yeah, that is a procedural issue. So this is not just a judgment call of, well, the Rockets got the short end of the stick. And even though, you know, it probably should have been counted, well, clearly it should have been counted. It was a made dunk. They took away 2 points. But this is not opening Pandora's box. This is a very unique situation that, to me, is worthwhile. And, you know, the final point that I want to get to on this, you know, you're seeing a lot of people saying, oh, you know, it's the same old Rockets. We know that they've done the stuff with, you know, leaking the officiating audit in the past, all those types of things. And you're seeing a lot of suggestions that, well, maybe they should be focused on their own issues, which, by the way, I'm pretty sure they are. Mike D'Antoni, James Harden, after the game, they were all talking about many of these other issues. you can walk and chew gum at the same time. Just because you're talking about one thing, same way with us, you can also focus on others. But the final point that I think is really compelling in this, all the people that are saying, well, you know, this is the Rockets just being too focused on whining and complaining and stuff like that. Show me an example of another team who had a similar circumstance yet responded differently. I have not seen anyone show that because, to my knowledge, it doesn't happen. This really is that rare. And when you try and think, okay, when's the last time that something was botched, not just the call, but a team trying to challenge it within the negotiated replay system and not being allowed to under bizarre circumstances, the story's not even making sense after the game, this is pretty unique. So to me, it's worthwhile. I don't know if it will work out. My guess is that either later today or Thursday we'll learn. What's interesting about it, you know, the Rockets leaked through Tim McMahon that they're optimistic as far as, you know, thinking that the league will step in, and that's why they haven't even filed a protest. They have 48 hours to file a protest, which would give them until late Thursday night to do so. Well, really, I mean, I guess they could out of principle if they want, but by the Rockets saying, well, we might not even have to do the protest, that we think the league will step in, what that's basically doing is saying, hey, we're putting the onus on the league that this is a big deal. We're going to make this a controversy, and clearly it's being talked about all over Twitter, all over the national talk shows today. And so in my opinion, you're going to see a statement from the league at some point, either later today or Thursday, and you know, either they'll step in and they'll say that, you know, either they're overturning the results or they're going to have a replay, or they'll say that there is, you know, some sort of mismanagement, but out of fear of precedent or whatever the logic may be. I mean, we know underneath it all, that'd be why they're afraid of opening Pandora's box. And, you know, if they replay a game, then everybody else says, oh, you know, well, will you replay my game? We know that would be the fear ultimately, even though this is somewhat different, people trying to use this as a template. And I understand that the league is going to be a little bit nervous about that. I get it. But the point is, I think we'll know by tomorrow night. If the league wants to step in, they'll strike while the iron is hot. You know, we had the one sports book, FanDuel, that already gave back money today on it. To me, if the league is going to step in, they're going to do it quickly. I don't think that you'll see a situation where, you know, they don't really say anything, but then the Rockets file their formal protest, and then a few days later after they gain all information, you know, 10 days from now, we get a ruling. I think one way or another, we'll have a pretty good indication by Thursday. Hope for the best. Will it work out? I don't know. I'm skeptical just because of how damn rare a successful protest is. But to me, it's clearly worthwhile because this is a pretty unique situation. And again, as far as the criticism of the Rockets, anybody, if you hear from your friends, anybody else talking about this, just ask them a simple question. What team has handled something comparable in a different manner? I don't know of any. And to me, that makes a pretty compelling case for a protest and why this is a very unique situation worthy of a further look from the league office.
You know, if the league office doesn't get involved, Daryl Morey could always bust out his cell phone.
Oh, yeah.
He could send out some more tweets.
Yeah.
That'd be a great little weapon to pull out.
And he's been very active on Twitter lately, as I'm sure you've noticed.
He has been. He's been tweeting up a storm. Now, Ben and I will continue to, well, we'll probably branch away from the Spurs game and the ineptitude of the officiating crew. But we'll branch away from that. We'll kind of touch base on the Rockets as a whole, kind of the state of the Rockets throughout the 20 games so far this season, some of the current trends and themes, and we'll get to that in just one moment. And we are back here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. That first segment may have been Locked On Referees, but you know, we'll keep it Locked On Rockets, I guess. But for right now, what we want to do is we're going to talk a little bit about the Rockets kind of as a whole, the season as a whole, because we're at this quarterway point now, and we're kind of getting an idea of what this team is. They're sitting at 13-7. Again, you'd rather be sitting at 14-6 after the Spurs game, but you know, one thing led to another, and unfortunately that game escaped you due to a variety of reasons, not just the missed dunk, but, you know, a collapse down the stretch, some poor shooting by your star tandem duo, and now in the Western Conference, you are sitting comfortably at the 5 spot, and you've got ahead of you the Lakers, Clippers, Nuggets, and Mavericks, all in that order. Ben, how do you see this Rockets team so far shaping up against the rest of the Western Conference, I should say?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, you look at being 13-7 and a couple of games off the pace. Well, the Lakers are 18-3, but most, you know, you're not too far off. You're in the 5 or 6 loss range. The Rockets are slightly off it. Well, you know, if you flip the Spurs game and the Clippers game, and, you know, both of them had some pretty controversial elements to them. You know, I guess the Spurs thing, as we talked about the protest, there's still at least a chance, as we're recording this Wednesday afternoon, that could be upheld or replayed. You never know. And then you have, of course, the Doc Rivers timeout fiasco and the Clippers. Just imagine how differently you would feel if they were 15-5. And you're really close to that being a reality. So that's why, you know, I'm not too down on them, especially when you consider, you know, the injuries, the illnesses to guys like Clint Capella, Daniel House.
They haven't had a fully healthy roster.
No, and they're 13-7. You know, they've had some terrible luck. If not for that, you probably should be 15-5. So overall, the wins and losses, I'm fine with. You know, that result against the Spurs, it sucks. And we know, you know, as far as talking about why they would protest, one game can make a difference. We saw last year, you know, one game's the difference between the 2 seed and the 4 seed. So, yes, there's a reason to push for this protest. If by any chance you can overturn the result, that would be great. But at the end of the day, it is just one of 82 games. And even if you make it harder on yourself, you know, if you go on a run, like we've seen the Rockets at times the last 2 seasons, where, you know, you have like a 17-3 type stretch, then you can make up that in a hurry. So standings-wise, I'm really not that concerned, especially when you look at, you know, we talked about the injuries, the illnesses. They haven't really had a healthy roster. I think they'll improve the team as they go through the year. They should be well-positioned for buyouts, et cetera, et cetera. All of that. I'm not too worried. Where I'm concerned in the grand scheme is the integration of Russell Westbrook, because I think we've just seen at times against especially the better teams, think late in that Clipper game, where Westbrook's shooting is such a liability. And at times, even against San Antonio, and I know the Spurs are not a good defense on the season as a whole, but, you know, Lonnie Walker, I mean, he has the tools, and there were times which against Harden, and some of it had to do with Harden's fatigue, but he more than held his own with this combination of length, athleticism, that kind of stuff. And it's just tough to get the driving lanes when the guy on Westbrook can sort of hedge and help a little bit, those types of things. And, you know, that's, to me, what hangs over this team. Russell Westbrook still shooting in the low 20s from three. And against the truly upper echelon teams, like the Clipper game, like Dallas, you're just so dependent on the James Harden formula still. In some ways, it feels like even more so, because at least with Chris Paul, you know, I know you referenced it after the San Antonio game, he could be that stabilizing force at times. At a bare minimum, you had to respect his three-point shooting on the floor. At this point, the burden for Harden, who's now averaging 39.5 points a game, it's just so damn high. You know, we talked about in the offseason acquiring Westbrook to sort of lower the burden on Harden, and maybe that'll eventually happen. You know, certainly he should play more games over 82, although the ultimate, because of course, look at Chris Paul, 20 games in, completely healthy. Imagine that. Of course, that would be how it turns out when you get rid of him.
To be fair, I don't miss every time that Chris Paul hits the floor, you know, wondering, is this going to be it?
Yeah.
Is this the injury?
Yeah, I know. I get that point. And, you know, we're only a quarter of the way into the season. That will probably change. But, you know, it's just striking when it gets to these tight situations. And, you know, I mentioned a couple of the games that got away already. The formula is just so dependent on James Harden, perhaps even more so. And, you know, I think Westbrook will get better as the year moves along. You know, you can't forget the first 5 games. He was really, really good.
And he's had times too where, like, think to the Miami Heat game here in Houston,
yeah,
where he turned it on and he successfully hit all those mid-range jump shots, and he played what would be considered a good game for Russell Westbrook.
And a year ago, he did start similarly slow, and it was coming off the offseason knee scope. And as the year moved along, especially from January onward, it was about the second half of the year, about mid-January, you know, he was a low 30s% shooter, which would make a world of difference in terms of the spacing, how things work for James Harden. But right now, it's troublesome. And what bothers me most about it, what nags at me, it's not just the percentages, it's how bad Westbrook is in these catch-and-shoot scenarios or off the ball. You know, there seems to be a big difference in that when Westbrook, you know, when he can take a couple of dribbles and step into a shot, those many times look pure. That's when he looks most comfortable. He looks especially, I would say, like a fish out of water in these off-ball shooting situations. Now, he can cut, and maybe he'll get better chemistry with that as the season moved along. But there's a huge problem in that, you know, this is just the eye test, but he looks so uncomfortable as a stationary shooter in the corners, which is what Chris Paul was at times. It allowed James Harden to really excel down the stretch of last season. And that needs to be rectified. You know, I think to some degree, Westbrook's going to have a natural bounce back for his career. He's a 30% three-point shooter. We mentioned he got a lot better as the year moved along last year. All of that is true, but it's not just the percentages. It's the types of threes that he makes. And so to me, you know, that's the kind of thing that hangs over me more than anything else. It's that, you know, you can't help but watch a game like that last night and think, boy, against playoff defenses, they are going to dare Russell Westbrook to beat them, and he's got to be willing to do it. And able to do it. Of course, he's willing.
As far as some of the X's and O's offensively go, you know, I noticed there were a handful of times last night where James was bringing the ball up and getting ready to, you know, initiate things the way that he usually does. And he actually would kind of get everybody in position, and he was waving around, and he actually pushed Westbrook off into the corner as opposed to being in the slot right there on either side, the left or the right of the court. And he kind of waved Westbrook off to the corner. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the spacing of things is concerned, in those exact moments, I can't remember if that actually made a difference, but it's something that they probably are actively working towards, and that they understand. Hey, they understand, you know, that's an entire organization of coaches and players, and these guys, they can't ignore it. You know, they understand that defenses are going to sag off Westbrook. They understand that Westbrook, maybe inside the organization, they're not, you know, calling him a liability at the three-point line. Mm-hmm. But they understand that they have to scheme differently on offense to get the most out of Westbrook. And to me, it seemed like James has made a vested commitment in trying to be a little bit more mobile when he doesn't have the ball. It seems mm-hmm. like he's setting more screens. He's moving around a bit more rather than just, you know, standing there like he's in a pile of quicksand, you know, not moving his feet at all. Whereas Westbrook, when he still doesn't have the ball, he's immobile. He's sitting in one spot. Yep. He's waiting for the ball to make its way back to him if necessary, with the rare exception of the handful of times, it's probably been, I don't know, three or four times that I can think of, where he's made a really clean cut and James was able to find him for a pass, and then we saw one last night where in that first or second overtime, Westbrook cut in as Harden was driving, and yeah. Harden found him, and he made it through a lot of contact. Should have been an and-one, but that's interesting to me because it seems like the organization and the team, they're trying to find wrinkles and trying to find ways to maybe mask the shooting issues for Westbrook. But at the end of the day, he's going to have to make some of those shots, or he's going to have to be comfortable in making the right decisions and reads out of those double teams and out of those moments where defenses are sagging off of him.
And let's also be fair to him. I think this should get a little bit better if they get and win, hopefully, a healthy Eric Gordon back, because they're really struggling to find anybody else with those second units. Austin Rivers had a good game last night, but overall, other than that, he's been, I would say, a little bit disappointing with regards to his three-point shooting. McLemore, I know Daryl Morey doesn't believe in it. You know, we've seen him on Twitter this week, but there's a huge split between his performances when he's with the bench and when he's in the starting lineup. Whether it be just a small sample size or there being something fundamentally different, he's not shooting well off the bench. Chris Clemens, Gary Clark, those guys are very unproven. There's a lot of volatility. And so it ends up happening, a lot of the inefficiency. And then, of course, I think it kind of, you know, you can see at times Westbrook get a little bit down on himself. He's still going to shoot. He's never going to shy away from being Russ.
He's an emotional guy.
Yeah, but you can see some levels of discouragement with that jumper not falling. And I think it would do so much to have another guy who can create his own offense to some degree in that second unit. You know, you do get Daniel House Jr. back, hopefully Thursday in Toronto. So when he comes back, hopefully Daryl Morey is right, sample size evens out, and McLemore starts playing better off the bench. Maybe he can be that guy over the short term, and then you get Eric Gordon back around Christmas. I think that's something we need to consider because, you know, Westbrook's having these issues with regards to fitting into a new system, his jump shot, and you're asking him for key stretches. We're talking, you know, 6 minutes in the first half, 6 minutes in the second half. That's not insignificant at all to be out there without Harden, basically anchoring a unit in which the guys playing around him are generally very unproven. Often guys like, as I mentioned, Chris Clemens, Gary Clark, who from game to game, you have no idea what you're going to get from guys who are that relatively unproven. Austin Rivers with his three-point shot has been very inconsistent. And so it plays into some of Westbrook's deficiencies when he's really kind of left out there on an island, so to speak, with a second unit that's, you know, not as good defensively either because you don't have Clint Capela out there.
And something that that is mind-boggling to me is that we haven't seen a lot of Russ in the pick and roll with anybody. With, you know, we've seen the kind of 1-2 pick and roll between Russ and Harden a little bit, you know, especially at the end of games when they're trying to set up the defender that they want on James Harden. We saw it a couple times last night even against the Spurs, but I don't understand why a guy like Russell Westbrook, who found so much success with Steven Adams for years in OKC, doesn't get an opportunity to run the pick and roll more with Clint Capella. Because to me, if you get Russ with his explosiveness, with his athleticism going downhill, where his defender is, you know, out of place due to a strong pick by Capella, and then you've also simultaneously got Capella running to the rim, I don't see why that can't be a lethal combo, just like it is when you have Harden and Capella running it.
Yeah, I would buy that. I think Tyson Chandler's a bit of an odd fit at his age with Russell Westbrook, because it's not like he really has the fluidity, the dexterity to kind of be the true finisher on a roll man. Although he did do it in that, well, I know the Spurs fans will say it was a backcourt violation, but it, you know, the play at the end of the third quarter. But that's obviously exception to the rule. I do think that,
but not just in the second unit. In the second unit.
Even with the starting lineup, yeah, they're not doing it that much. And of course, a lot of it has to do with running that offense through Harden. But yeah, maybe that's something you can do to better integrate him, get him some confidence. Because I do agree. I think that's part of it. It's a little bit of a confidence issue. I think, you know, you can see the Miami game's the perfect example. When he gets it going, he looks like a different player. He's so much more decisive. He attacks the rim. And, you know, these games where it's not going for him, you can see that he's just, in a way, timid. Like, he still shoots, but it's almost like he doesn't have that extra burst. He's a little bit down on himself, you know? You can sort of read his, you know, he's a guy, I don't think Russ would be an especially good poker player, because you can almost always see how he's feeling just through his expressions.
Is it bad that I imagine him playing poker and then the dealer asks him the question, like, you know, hit or stay, and he just goes, next question?
Yeah.
Like, that's immediately what I imagine.
Yeah. But I think you're right. You know, maybe that's something you can do in the starting lineup to get him going more, because I do think a lot of this, you know, to me, that's kind of the $64,000 question when it comes to, you know, the Rockets at the quarter point. You know, where are they going as far as, you know, relative to other contenders, the Clippers, the Lakers, stuff like that? To me, that's the obvious elephant in the room, is integrating Russell Westbrook. You know, I feel pretty good defensively after that 3-3 start. They've been very good. Last night, I thought it was fine, other than, you know, the finish, but there were some weird things. The momentum, they kind of ran out of gas. You're getting Capella back after missing a couple of games with the flu. You still didn't have Daniel House Jr. I think the defense has made a lot of strides. I'm not so worried about that. I think also at some point they'll add more pieces during the year. I'm not too worried about that. I mean, the one thing that just sort of hangs over is the fact that, hey, you know, these other teams, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, you know, you're supposed to have Russell Westbrook as kind of your Robin to James Harden's Batman. To this point, he has not been that on a consistent basis. And so to me, you know, that's the thing that's sort of hanging over. You know, I'm fine with the defense. I like where the team is at in terms of, you know, collectively. I think they kind of shook off that slow start. They responded how you'd like to see a championship team respond. James Harden has been tremendous. But, you know, the big question, the guy who's supposed to be, you know, this is a league of star duos now after the offseason. We said it going into the year. And to this point, Russell Westbrook has not held up his end of the bargain on a consistent basis, especially in the offensive end of the floor. And so to me, that's kind of the thing that hangs over all of this.
And we'll be back in just a second to wrap things up in the final segment of this podcast. But first, a quick word from our friends over at MyBookie. Are you the type of fan that knows football so well that you could choose any game and call it? Well, MyBookie is the place for you, because they let you turn all your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet. Between football season, NBA, and the start of college basketball season, it's time to get off the sideline and get in on the action with MyBookie. If you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag, because no one gives you more ways to win. If you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. Just use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. And we are back here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, here with Ben DuBose. And Ben, at the end of that last segment, you know, we talked about Westbrook has just been inconsistent. And I posited at the beginning of this season, in preseason, I said that I think you and I had a slightly differing opinion on this, because I said that I thought that the acquisition of Westbrook not only raised the ceiling of the Rockets but lowered the floor. And I want to say that your response to that was actually that you thought that their floor would be raised simply because of the availability of Russell Westbrook, that he was going to simply be present for more games than Chris Paul was. Now, my original point behind that was I think that the worst version of Westbrook is worse than the worst version of Chris Paul. And obviously the injury, you know, the injury concerns are there. And so, yes, having, you know, the best availability is availability. You know, having Westbrook is just better than having no Chris Paul. But to this point, my biggest concern is that Westbrook's inconsistent play, when he gives you a bad game, it's a bad game.
Yeah.
Like in the Spurs game. And when he gives you a good game, he gives you a really good game, arguably a better game than what current version Chris Paul can give you. And that's where my point came from with the lower floor but higher ceiling, which lends itself towards Daryl Morey's, one of Daryl Morey's favorite terms, more variance.
Yeah. I think it depends on what the context is, which obviously there are a lot of discussions that come down to that. The reason I still think that the floor is higher, San Antonio last night, and that was a pretty flukish game. The Lonnie Walker explosion, the made dunk that didn't count, the protest that, as we're recording this Wednesday afternoon, is still in progress, or at least the pseudo-protest. I don't think it's been officially filed. We talked about that back in segment one. But as far as Westbrook, that was the first game that you have lost all year to a sub-500 team. Generally, you have taken care of business. And I think a lot of it, you know, you look at Westbrook's better games. Miami might be one exception, although Miami did not have Jimmy Butler in that game. But generally, he's played very well. He's been at his most efficient against the lesser teams. And I think that's where you've just had this big talent advantage. But the games in which, you know, other than the Spurs game, which is an outlier on a few levels, you know, it's the Clippers, it's Dallas, it's those types of games lately where, you know, we've seen some issues with Russell Westbrook, and that's where we're kind of, you know, micro-analyzing all of this. To me, that's where I worry about the ceiling. Like, you do have this variance, but against the better teams, they're able to sort of hone in on, I guess, your downside is the way to put it, put Westbrook in positions where he's less likely to succeed. And so it's just easier for them to scheme, I feel like, than it was against the Rockets with Chris Paul. So I totally see where you're coming from in that, you know, if Westbrook gets hot in any given game, combine that with his availability, and, you know, you're right. He probably does give you a higher ceiling in terms of just your sheer explosion factor. But the way it plays out in terms of your standings, what to this point it's done, it's made the Rockets, you know, you don't see very many games against lesser opponents that they lose. And after that 3-3 start, not only are they winning most of these games, San Antonio being the one exception, they're generally winning by huge, huge margins. Like, they beat Atlanta by 47 points. It's the games against better competition. You can throw Denver in there as well, that you just, it feels as if, at least to me, that the Rockets are a little too predictable, that there's not really that second direction that they can turn to in terms of their offense. Maybe they'll get better. We know they've been trying the unconventional defenses on Harden, many of these guys, the traps almost to half court at times. But to me, that's what I feel. And I think there's some truth in it in terms of the bottom line, wins and losses. The Rockets have been even more consistent than ever. They're not really losing, San Antonio the exception, to bad teams. In many circumstances, they're hammering them. But they also haven't really had too many true statement games. You know, the losses that they've had of late, excluding San Antonio, the Nuggets, the Clippers, the Mavs, well, those happen to be the best teams on your schedule. And so to me, that's where I feel like, at least at this point, he's lowered your ceiling a little bit.
And interestingly enough, you know, I think the reason that this has, in a way, worked, and I say worked with maybe an asterisk behind it so far, is Westbrook, for all his inefficiency, Harden is arguably the most efficient star in the league. And so I think those two kind of counteract each other, because Harden is so efficient that it doesn't matter as much when you've got Russell Westbrook, who might have a night where he shoots 40% from three or something of that nature, you know, where he's, or sorry, not 40% from three, my apologies, you know, 40% from within the arc, where he has an inefficient shooting night, where he's not the best version of himself. You've got Harden, who's, you know, hovering around, what, 64% true shooting right now, leading the league or something crazy like that.
Yeah, it's pretty
crazy. Right behind Luka. But overall, the dynamic between the two is that Westbrook has to be that Robin to James Harden's Batman. And I said it right after the Spurs game, and I felt this way right after the Clippers game, that you no longer have the safety valve that is Chris Paul. Chris Paul gave you a level of... Chris Paul gave me confidence at the end of games when things were close, when things were coming down to the wire. I consistently wanted the ball in Chris Paul's hands. Something about, and this isn't a knock on James Harden, this is more a compliment to Chris Paul than anything, than it is a knock on James Harden. But the way that he would orchestrate things down the line, the way that he would get the team in the spots that they needed to be in and generate a quality look or generate points on the board just to keep the scoreboard moving. Because again, against the Spurs, you saw it, they couldn't even get points on the board. They got completely blasted in that fourth quarter in the second half.
Yeah, and I think you make a fair point. It's, are you looking at it game by game, or are you looking at it in the grand scheme? Because, yeah, there's just, in terms of how it plays out, wins and losses, yes, Russell Westbrook gives you an overwhelming talent advantage. But in terms of especially the upper echelon teams and the way you need to attack, there's a certain structure that you many times need at the end of these games, and you may see it Thursday night against Toronto, who's 15-5, playing extremely well, and you're on the road, and they'll probably be a little bit tired. There's a certain discipline and stability that Chris Paul gives you late in these games, which, against those types of teams, yeah, I could see your floor being higher, because at a bare minimum, you're not going to be totally disorganized. You're going to be in the right positions. Whereas with Harden, and especially with Westbrook, without having that true floor general out there, you do have more stretches, especially against the truly upper echelon teams, that you do look a little lost, a little disorganized, discouraged. And so to me, that's sort of the split. Maybe the best way to look at this is that in the regular season, I think having Russell Westbrook instead of Chris Paul raises your floor, but it kind of limits the ceiling a little bit. In the playoffs, you might can argue that it lowers the floor because of the types of defenses you're going to go up against. Those are the ones where I think you really need that Chris Paul stability factor. You know, the Spurs, say what you will, it's still Greg Popovich. You know, that calming influence. I think that's where you're going. And so that might be, you know, regular season versus playoffs. That might be where there's a bit of a discrepancy. And, you know, Toronto, the defending champs, and they don't have Kawhi, but Siakam's taken the leap. Fred VanVleet, who now is a Rockets hero for his comments about James Harden today. I'm sure you've seen those about Harden being basically beloved by players, and that the critics of James are largely casuals who have a fantasy of what the game is supposed to be. Love you for saying that, Fred, by the way. But
Freddie's my best friend now.
Yeah. What a heroic figure. But serious note, to me, those are the situations late in games where I could buy that, you know, your floor goes down because you're more prone to possessions where, you know, you just look lost, where basically nothing happens and Harden ends up launching a contested step back 30-footer with 2 seconds on the shot clock because there's otherwise nothing going on. To me, that's what's changed with the absence of Chris Paul. And that's where, again, I think a lot of it, we've talked in these last two segments primarily about Russell Westbrook, but be it him getting more confident by making more shots or doing something schematically different. If you're Mike D'Antoni, we talked about maybe more pick and rolls with Clint Capella. I don't think it's going to change until Russell Westbrook gets more confident, because right now it just feels like in these late game situations, he's passive because he knows that, you know, his jump shot has largely deserted him and everything comes down to James Harden, and Russell Westbrook just, you know, he'll shoot the ball because he's still Russ, but he just doesn't seem to have that swagger that he did even 2 years ago when he was, you know, an MVP, when he was at his best. And to me, you know, that's sort of the thing when you talk about the Rockets, what's holding them back from the level of the, you know, the Lakers, the Clippers right now. To me, that more than anything, it's that dynamic right there.
Now, for this Wednesday afternoon episode, December 4th, this is where we'll break things. As always, thank you for tuning in. Now, Ben, what do you want to go ahead and plug before we get you out of here?
Not much. Just follow me on Twitter, Ben Dubose, and of course, Rockets Wire. You can follow at the Rockets Wire on Twitter or rocketswire.usatoday.com. Of course, that's the USA Today hub for Rockets coverage, where I am now editor.
All right. Thank you very much, Ben. We appreciate it.
Sure thing.
Again, that was our resident correspondent, Mr. Ben Dubose. Now, if you want more content before our next show, social media is where it's all happening. I'm on there at JT Gatlin. Of course, Ben is on there at Ben Dubose. And the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, the website, LockedOnRockets.com, and of course, our email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. Really, it's just a way for you to let me know if there's anything we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes that go straight to your inbox before they show up on the previously mentioned social media outlets, and then we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Again, for this Wednesday afternoon, December 4th episode, this is where we break. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back again very, very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.